and Spider Episode 27, Cat People.
Bat and Spider Episode 26. We are back. No. Erase everything I just said. Bat and Spider Episode 27.
27.
Believe it or not, Chuck, mere 4 to 5 hours ago, we re-recorded episode 26, but this is episode 27.
Yeah, we are, we got a lot of timetables out. We're like shoveling stuff around. We're doing stuff ahead of time. So we're speaking to you from the past.
Because Chuck, I once learned from my good friend, Jonesy Loves Beer, there's no vacation from obligation. So before I pack my bags and hit the old dusty trail for a week, we're banging this one out.
Get it done so you don't got to think about it anymore.
The bottom of this episode, Cat People, is we are certainly talking about.
Very excited about Cat People. Cat People. Movie I've wanted to watch for a long time. I've never watched it.
I watched a couple things, actually, Chuck.
Lay it on.
I watched a Roger Corman butte.
Yeah.
Humanoids from the Deep.
Oof.
Yeah. 1980. The cannery, the canning industry, seaside town of Noyo, California, has mutated genetically modified fish for them to devolve into some sort of humanoid thing. And what they want to do is kill men and rape women.
Oh my God. Are these
not kill women.
Just rape them.
Rape them. And put fish eggs in their bellies.
Wait, are these humanoid fishes?
They're humanoid fishes. I cannot confirm. I cannot confirm a penis.
This sounds like that Guillermo del Toro movie.
That's heavily influenced.
Wow.
From this Humanoids of the Deep.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Do I need to watch this movie?
It's like 80 minutes long, so it's pretty good in that respect. It wasn't bad. Wasn't a bad flick, I thought. Just a good creature feature with some Roger Corman-esque things, to attract an audience, which is bees and bees and more bees.
Man, I feel like I've got a good track record with Corman, I have to say. Like, at least within this era, 50s to 70s, I don't think I've seen one that hasn't really disappointed me so far. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot that I have not seen, but...
A lot.
But yeah. But yeah, he can bring it. He knows how to, if nothing, he can keep your attention. Like usually there's no fat, usually I'm not bored. Three quarters through like I do with a lot of movies.
Yeah, it gets to the action and it keeps you afloat with the action. And so that is one I watched. And another one I watched, Chuck, I wasn't sure if I should talk about it or not.
You should.
Christopher Lee. Peter Cushing. The Mummy.
Hammer Horror. Yeah.
Hammer Horror. Back on it. Back on the train. God. The allure was too strong. And Chuck. Yeah. I mean, we're talking couple different reused set pieces already, my friend.
You recognized them.
Yeah. I did.
From Frankenstein?
Frankenstein and is that the only one we did from the show?
The Gorgon?
The Gorgon. So the Gorgon, there was one set piece with with Peter Cushing, the doctor in the Gorgon, who had like his office behind this wall with like medical grade glass.
Yeah.
Well, that room was reused in this and it was like a little bit of, it was like a courtroom of sorts, another courtroom type situation.
Oh, nice.
But this medical grade glass had like wallpaper over top of the windows to spice it up a little bit. And also the room in the Gorgon where the rental house was, where the father died, the son died, and then the father died right after him
set.
In the beginning of the movie.
Great
set.
Man.
And this is the Hammer interpretation of The Mummy. And what we have is, a scorned lover buried alive in a mummy situation who was in love with the Pharaoh's lady. And he was cursed to protect this lady. And, you know, Peter Cushing and his father and uncle uncover the tomb, and a follower of the god who was protecting this high priestess's tomb has unleashed Christopher Lee on them to exact revenge on for disturbing the tomb. And it's a blackened mummy, and Christopher Lee is underneath of all that, and it was a great ride. It was great.
Hammer can't
so good.
They're so good. They're so good.
Yeah, so good.
I'm still on my old Universal kick, I started re-listening. Actually, I never finished it, but the that podcast series, what's that called? You Must Remember This, by Karina Longworth. A couple of years ago, she did one on Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi, and I just got to the episode where she was describing Son of Frankenstein. And I was like, man, I gotta watch this. I mean, I've had the movie for like 15 years and like the Frankenstein box set DVD. I just never get past Frankenstein and then Bride of Frankenstein. I've never like gone beyond that. Probably because I'm like, you know, you never hear about them, you know, how good they can be. But Son of Frankenstein is pretty awesome. The sets in this one, they like did, I don't know architectural terms, but they like kind of like did a different interpretation of Frankenstein's castle, which is more like, I don't know if it's like more modern, like Bauhaus maybe. I don't know if that's the right word. but it looks really cool. They spent some money on those sets. They look amazing. But my favorite thing was that Boris was back as the monster, but they got Bela Lugosi to play Igor, the assistant who's like supposedly he was called Fritz in the first movie, and his whole backstory was like they hanged him after the events of the first story. But he lived. So he's alive again, but he's got like this broken neck and he's all like deformed, and he'll like knock on this hard part on his neck and it sounds like wood. But man, they put like a wig and these disgusting teeth in Bela, and I gotta say, it's like my favorite Bela performance. Like I like it, him doing this better than Dracula. And it's funny because he like if you listen to this podcast, he's like, he thought he was like the handsomest dude on the planet, and he hated doing makeup and stuff and playing monsters. Like he was like, no, I'm handsome Dracula. And it just, you know, even though he wasn't that handsome.
Yeah. Right.
But he loved himself. And he would make fun. He would like diss Boris Karloff and like the press for like relying on makeup and stuff for his performances.
Wow.
So then of course, like a year after he said that, he got offered this part and he never said no to anything. So of course, he donned makeup for this, but man, he knocked it out of the park. He was such a weird, creepy character in that. Yeah. I think he might come back as Igor again in the next one.
Wow.
Which I'm looking forward to watching. But that was cool. A great one. I not great. I gave it like 3 stars, but it's pretty good.
It's good.
All the other Frankenstein stuff, it's like, they did it like 2 times already. So it's a little running over the same old ground, but it was a fun watch. And then last night I watched the brand new Netflix, John, Hubie Halloween, Dale.
Oh, yeah.
Starring Adam Sandler. And you know what? It's about what I expected, but the way I describe it is that Adam Sandler and his friends set out to make kind of like a feel-good Christmas movie, but for Halloween instead of Christmas. And it's kind of what it is. Mm-hmm. Like, it's got some raunchy jokes, but it's like more family-friendly. And it's just, you know, it's about an Adam Sandler-type character, Hubie Dubois, who is obsessed with making sure everyone has a safe and happy Halloween. And he has his, like, Swiss Army knife thermos that can, you know, do everything he needs. Like, not only soup, but it's like a telescope. It's ridiculous. Like, it does everything he needs. It's like Batman's utility belt. It's like the big joke. And it's like filled with all these guest stars of like, you know, Adam Sandler's friends. Steve Buscemi plays a werewolf, which is really hilarious.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's dumb. Like, the whole time you will say out loud, God, this is so dumb, while you're laughing through it.
Right. Yes.
But yeah, it's, I mean, I have a soft spot for Sandler. Like, I understand why people hate him. You know, I've went through phases where I'm like, God, it's so annoying. But I don't know.
Totally.
I think there's a place for Sandler's movies in this world. I look at them. I don't know. I have a whole theory running in my head that I need to explore and put on paper someday, but about Sandler movies. But yeah,
It's fun there. Watch. It's ready for you when you're ready.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chuck.
Hubie Dubois.
That's good. I'm glad you watched it. That is on my list, actually.
It's fun.
Because I have said soft spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the Sandlerverse.
And I want to ask you if he's, because the character's named Hubie Dubois, wasn't the water boy named Bobby Dubois in Waterboy? Do you remember?
No, it was Bobby Boucher.
Bobby Boucher. I got it wrong. Okay, never mind.
Bobby Boucher.
How could I forget that?
I know. That's going to be in your head. Kathy Bates. Kathy Bates's version.
Yeah. The lady they got to play Hubie's mom is great in this, though. She's
so
great. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Great. I can't wait to watch it. Possibly on vacation.
Yeah, it would be a fun vacation watch.
Nice. Thanks for that review, Chuck.
Hey, no problem. Should we get into Cat People, Dale?
Yeah, 1942, Chuck. What is Cat People all about?
Cat People, a young woman, Irina, she's from Serbia. She's like a immigrant to the United States. She's a young woman artist, and she's kind of seemingly obsessed with cats. She's always at the park zoo sketching the panthers. And she strikes up a little meet cute with a boat engineer, architect guy, played by Kent Smith.
In the middle of New York?
Yeah. But they fall in love. They get married real quick, but poor old Kent Smith finds out that Irina's obsession with cats is pretty deep. She claims to be descended from a group of people in Serbia who worshipped cat gods, and they worry that if they ever have sex or kiss a man, they will turn into a cat and kill the man. So they get married, but they haven't even kissed, and it's like this sort of ongoing anxiety. Yeah, and that's the basic meat of this, is that this marriage falling apart in the wake of someone who believes that she's a cat.
So what I was really impressed with, you know, aside from the fact that in 1942, it was probably way more accepted that man and woman get married without ever kissing, right?
Yeah.
But this film really got into the anxieties of that after the fact.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect that so far as to even say that maybe it's, you know, a psychiatric issue, and that should be addressed. And maybe, you know, the husband can help Irina find that kind of stuff out, like help figure it out, because she wants to be there as a wife. And I thought that was really, really cool that it went that deep into that sort of aside. It was more just like this suspenseful, like something was hanging over their heads, and in conjunction, the audience's heads, like at any time something was going to give or happen, but it never quite gave it to you. But there was this anxiety, like this taut thread running through the whole thing.
Totally agree. There is, the way I saw it, And I did not expect that at all. I expected this to be like a monster cat person just killing people. I didn't expect this to be a marriage story about what it's like to be in a relationship with someone who is, I mean, to me, it's clearly an allegory for depression, and that Irina, her cat obsession is like
how she,
it's, she's like depressed and she can't, you know, it's like, you know, when you live with like when you're close with someone who's like really depressed, it's like, it's all encompassing. It affects everything in your life, and you take it on, you know, there's a good chance you'll get depressed. And it really like hit all those little notes of what that's like to deal with that, in a relationship with someone you really care about. And I was just like, holy crap, like this is way more than a monster movie.
Yeah, totally.
It hit me like crazy. I want to give the background. So this is a Val Lewton production. He produced this. He got a deal with RKO to do their B horror movies. And this was the first one he produced. And he doesn't have writing credits, but he did, by all accounts, he did a lot of writing on this. And the other thing was like part of the deal was that the bosses at RKO was like, you can kind of do whatever you want, but we pick the titles. So they literally gave him the title Cat People and said, make a movie.
Oh my gosh.
So,
really?
What? Yeah. So he was like, I think he like wasn't that. He was like, this is going to be a piece of shit. So I think he kind of like expected, you know, he just kind of didn't care. But he also was like, you know what? I'm going to hire a cool writer and we're going to we're going to make something interesting out of this. And I think I can see why this is kind of a legendary B movie, because it's much deeper and it tackles things like I think is tackling depression and, you know, that the weird relationships people have.
Sure. When they get married and stuff. Yes.
I was kind of blown away.
Yeah. And you know, it was to get to the place that the Irina and the husband Kent.
Yeah.
Kent is his real name. Oliver.
Oliver Reed.
Oliver and Irina, they get to that place, it's a little janky. I mean, they get married without kissing. And
it's very fast. Like it's like they have two dates and all of a sudden they're married.
Yeah. So the second date, he is at her house and he falls asleep on her couch and it's a very touching moment. He wakes up and he's like, you know, I'm in love with you. And it's, you know, it's very romantic and, you know, they don't kiss or anything, you know, and the entire time, which I loved that Irina's apprehension that she really believed that she was going to turn into a cat and kill the one that tries to kiss her and love her. She doesn't, in the beginning, she's totally honest and open with Oliver about this issue, and Oliver's kind of like, you know, well, it's not an issue now, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, but it was kind of cool that Oliver chose to take that on because he was so infatuated with Irina and loved Irina, and Irina was easy to fall in love with too, but the more you watch it, the more you can kind of get the sense that in the script, they really tried to get across that, Chuck, I think you and I as cat people.
Yeah.
Like they really tried to get across that Oliver was in love with a house cat.
Yes.
Like, because to us, I think to us, you know, you just can't help but love and be close with this animal that's, you know, like sitting in front of your monitor, you know, so you can't get any work done. And so like by the second date, you know, Oliver's in the script and through conversation and through Oliver's conversations with other people, you know, it's really like a nail on the head, but in a subtle way that, you know, Irina is giving off house cat vibes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like he describes like, he's like, when she's in the room, I can't take my eyes off of her and I'm drawn to her and I have to be near her and I have to touch her.
Right.
And that's what it's like living with a cat. Like
it is. Right. If the
like,
cat's
if they're
there,
in the room, it's like, man, absolutely. I gotta pet that fucking cat right now. Like
I know. It's like fine, I will like let this cat inconvenience the shit out of me. And like even if I have to pee and that cat lays on my lap, it means I can't get up.
Yeah.
You know? That's the way it is.
Yeah.
I think they really did a good job of Oliver conveying that apprehension, because he even says like, I don't know if it's real love, like marriage love.
Yeah. Like he realizes like, wait, maybe I'm not in love with her. And I'm just like, it's like this weird infatuation this thing that these vibes she's putting off that just, it's like hypnotizing to me.
Yeah. It's just like, that's what happens. You're spellbound, you know, and you know, people who aren't cat people, quote unquote, probably call us crazy, but it's true. I think it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to convey in the script for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're a cat, you go into a stranger's house or you see a cat on the street you've never seen before, you're like, oh man, I fucking love that cat. Come here, cat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're just like following that cat. You just want to see what that cat's up to.
What's that cat
like,
doing?
Just look at that cat hanging out there on that fence.
Wonder what he's up to.
I can't stop staring at it. You know?
We are the true cat people, Dale. I think that's what we're getting out of this.
Right.
How about some of the fun stuff? So on their second date, Oliver makes the stupid decision. Okay, this is our second date. I like this girl. I'm going to get her a pet kitty as a present.
What kind of like courting ass ritual?
Oh my God. How presumptuous, right?
Yeah.
Imagine if someone got you an animal you have to all of a sudden take care of, like on a second date. Oh my God.
Especially, I mean, if I'm single, I'm not interested in maintaining.
Yeah,
red flag. Like, especially you buy it from a pet store that shoves this kitten in a shoebox no bigger than the size of the kitten itself.
God, that shoebox. I was so angry.
This cat is inside this shoebox for an 8-hour shift.
Yeah. He's down at the boat architectures doing his drawings, and all of a sudden people hear this meow. And he's like, oh yeah, I got a cat in this shoebox.
Shoebox with holes in it. What?
Jeez. At least Alice's coworker, who will come up later, she got the cat out for a little bit, but he shoved that cat right back in that shoebox.
I mean, live on tape, we see this cat get shoved back into this shoebox.
Cats love boxes, but they like to put themselves in.
Right. You never force a cat to get in a box like that, Chuck.
Never.
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 So, Oliver shows up to Irina's door. Tactfully, Irina's like, you know, maybe if you want to get me an animal, get me something else.
Yeah.
Like this cat, because, you know, Irina, the cat, takes one, locks eyes with this kitten, and this kitten's not having it.
Hello.
Look, Irina, I brought you a present. You little devil.
Oh, it's all right. It's just that cats don't seem to like me.
Like, how did they scare that cat on camera?
I was in love with that performance, that cat with his hair sticking up and like doing the crab walk. Yeah.
Did they like beat some aluminum foil with a wooden spoon to like freak the cat out? Like
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe they just had a dog nearby.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. On set.
Yeah. And they go, and this was pretty funny. They go on their second date, they go back to the pet store to exchange it for a bird. As soon as Irina walks in that store, the whole and all the animals, the whole store just flips out.
Yeah, man.
Which was a nice touch.
Yeah, it was. It really sold it like something or something more. You know, it's not maybe not just in her head.
Yeah, I mean, they're teasing you the whole movie. Like, wow, does she really turn into a cat? Is she really a cat person? And to their credit, like they really don't give you hard proof until maybe the last scene. And I was like really appreciative of that. Like I loved how long they kind of kept you guessing. Like, is she really turning into a cat? Like that's ridiculous. Like,
yeah.
I appreciated that. Along with like the super serious relationship stuff, I thought it worked surprisingly.
It worked hand in hand because you know Irina has these apprehensions and this you know this psychosis about herself, but it's not being helped by like Oliver and his friend Alice.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very modern at the time in 42 that Alice had, you know, was like equal on the job with Oliver and they had this like man woman friendship. They hung out outside of work and but you know, with that it could be interpreted the wrong way, especially on a new relationship when you're with somebody new and you know you might be closer. Oliver was certainly very close with Alice and a little too close at times, like spilling the beans on Irina's like looking for a psychiatrist and stuff like that. It really got kind of heavy and like none your business type situation.
But after it came out that they were in love with each other, him and Alice.
Yeah.
That kind of made sense that he saw her as, you know, someone that he was intimate enough with to tell her, you know, what was going on in his marriage and stuff. But yeah, at first it's like, oh, dude, why would you do that? Like,
keep that in
the family.
Yeah, totally skeevy. Totally. Yeah.
I don't want to jump to the second half because there's so many good scenes at the end, but maybe we should. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, so Oliver's like in it to win it. He's willing to do what it takes to make the marriage work, and you know, even on fear that it's like they're at the wedding shower in this Serbian restaurant, and Irina's approached by this Serbian woman.
Yeah,
who was like, you know,
she's got like a bow in her hair, and that kind of looked like cat's ears. Like there's people eating dinner. Like she looks like a cat.
I know. Yeah. And she's like, she approaches Irina, and she's like speaking to her in the Serbian language, and she's asking if she's her sister, mine sister, or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Mir sustvar.
Yeah, because she knows Irina should not be getting married. She knows.
Yeah, she's trying to be as polite as possible, but
that was awesome. Like,
yeah, it was.
Any other movie this time, that would have been a super wordy, like she would have took her aside and had this super long conversation. Mm-hmm. But all she just said one word in Serbian like twice and then walked out the door, and Irina's just like she's shook, and I was like, damn, that was cool. Mm-hmm. That was so well done.
It worked. Yeah, it was so much. It was just 1,000 times better because like that language barrier was there. Yeah. So you think maybe she would have said something else if she could speak the language, but she had this heavy, thick accent, and she was like immediately freaked out and like ran out of the place because there's like another cat in the room.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And then Oliver, with the help of her, you know, his good friend, Alice, finds a psychiatrist, and Irina goes to the psychiatrist for one visit, and the psychiatrist is basically like, you need to heal yourself, you need to help yourself, you're not a cat, but you have some hang-ups. And Irina is in total disagreement, so, you know, she starts lying about where she's going because she wants to make Oliver happy, but you know, she's not going to go to an appointment for a doctor that's telling her that she's telling her something that she doesn't believe in.
Yeah.
She doesn't need to hear that she's crazy when she's definitely thinks she's a cat.
Yeah. And that the Dr. Louis Judd, who was the psychiatrist played by Tom Conway. I just watched another Val Lewton movie, called The Seventh Victim that he is also in, and he plays the same character in that movie. Like it's almost like there's a Val Lewton universe a little bit, because he plays a psychiatrist in that movie treating like one of the main characters. Who's in a satanic cult. But I kind of love that actor. He has this very weird particular way of speaking.
That I noticed that.
I'm not going to try and do his accent, but it's an accent I like to listen to, but it also like drives me crazy. Like I want to be able to talk like that, but I can't.
Right.
I can't mimic it. But I love hearing it.
So it just
come out
drives
of
you
mouth.
Up.
It's so weird.
Insane.
Yeah, I was surprised how like kind of deep the dark corners of the mind they like kind of ventured in. You know, he's like, hey, you probably have some like childhood hangups because it sounds like, you know, your dad died when you were really young, and you know, you probably have issues with that scarred you as a kid. You know, we can get into all that and hopefully find you a way out of this, this anxiety you're having about, you know, thinking you're a cat. And I was surprised for 43 that there's some weird stuff with the marriage later in that doctor, which is weird.
Right. Definitely.
That I don't really understand, but, and then it becomes clear, you know, as it goes on, Kent Smith, Oliver, he's getting more and more frustrated. Like to his credit, he never like gets angry at Irina. You know, you kind of, you always expect like the man in the situation where he's not getting, you know, getting his, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To get frustrated. But to his credit, he's cool as a cucumber. He just wants to help Irina, but eventually it's starting to build up. It's getting to him, and he's realizing, you know, his workmate Alice confesses, hey, I'm in love with you, man. Deal with it. I'm just gonna let that lay there.
You're married.
Yeah. And slowly he's like, yeah, I kind of love you too. You know, he's like, you know what? Along with how he's like, his relationship with Irina is maybe more of a relationship with a house cat, and that, yeah, he really does care for Alice. So it's their relationship is forming. But then what that does is that causes Irina, she starts getting jealous and like, okay, my man is starting to slip away. She starts stalking Alice through the streets. And this is where it gets really good.
This is where, like, this is the first half of this movie is over.
Yeah.
And, like, a new role for Irina to play. Like, she starts, even though she's, you know, she's a human. And from what we know, she's only human. She thinks she's a cat. And she starts taking that to another level. So she starts, like, you know, through some weird, like, Three's Company mix-up. Kind of, you know, so Oliver's working late. No, Oliver once goes to work late, but then decides to go to a restaurant. And then Irina thinks he's at working late and she calls work and Alice picks up. And even though Oliver's not there, but it like raises the hackles on the back of Irina's neck, you could tell. And starts silently stalking Alice through the streets and into her hotel or into her apartment building. And, you know, Alice goes to use the pool in this medieval apartment building with zero lighting. She's, you know, she's down there in the lower levels where the pool is housed. And, you know, she starts hearing like cat noises, like and panther noises, not a cat, like claws. And
you do see, Alice, she looks up the stairs and sees a shadow of a cat coming down the stairs. And she like, she freaks, she doesn't know where to go. She's trapped. So she jumps into the pool, which I don't know if that's, I mean, I guess that's, if you're really trapped, it seemed like there would be another exit down there, but whatever.
Like that's, this is why they don't make buildings. Yeah. There's a different kind of fire code back then.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's true. So she gets in the pool and it's this amazing scene where the shadow is just stalking her around the pool. And it's like imagine you're in a pool that's like, it's not well lit, but you know how the light plants dances off the water, you know, of a pool. So it makes those wobbly shadows and they really use that well by sort of manipulating those shadows and like, you know, in the viewer's head, you're like, you know, you're thinking cat lady, cat lady, cat lady. So it's like, oh, there's this cat stalking her around and she keeps spinning in the pool. And it's really effective.
It really is. The way the shadow like follows from like left to right on the you know, against the bubbly dancing wall. You know, it's like this lump walks, stalks the shadow from left to right. And
they've, I think they even, I noticed a few times they used, I think they did cartoons overlays for shadows. Did you notice that?
Mm-hmm. There were like on some, certain occasions,
Which I love. Yeah. I love whenever they do that.
I know, right? It's especially in, you know, black and white, it's just so much more effective.
Yeah, it looks great. Looks great. And she lets out, she goes insane. She screams like crazy, this blood-curdling scream. And like the ladies working upstairs are like, oh my God. And they run down and they find Irina just standing there.
Yeah.
And she's just all of a sudden like, hey, how's it going? And Alice is like, she doesn't want to sound crazy. Like, I swear I just saw a giant panther in here. So she's like, Irina just scared me. I didn't, you know, she just appeared and scared me. No big deal. Everything's fine.
But Irina's totally like embracing it.
Oh yeah.
She's eating up the fact that Alice freaked the F out. And she's like, oh, I'm just here. I thought you might know where Jim was kind of thing.
No big deal. She slinks away. And then Alice gets out of the pool and asks the girl to hand her robe and they pick it up and it's shredded. Like a cat was playing with it.
Yeah. Like a big pawed cat.
Yeah. And I think there was one scare, I think even before that scene, where Irina's stalking Alice down the street. And this is, I think this actually is called like the Luton bus scare or something like this. And it's like a close up. The tension is building. The music's building. You think she's being stalked by a cat. And it's like a close up of Alice's face. And then all of a sudden you hear this low rumble that sounds like a cat growl. Uh-huh.
Come on, sister. Are you riding with me or ain't you? You look as if you'd seen a ghost.
Did you see it?
And it builds super fast, and then all of a sudden, a city bus shoots into frame, and the door opens, and it wasn't a cat sound, it was the bus.
Yeah,
and,
so good.
And she just, like, turns, and she's, like, at the bus's door, and she gets on, you know, to get out of danger. But it's, like, it's this great jump scare that I think that's really famous, and it might be, like, the first time, like, that type of scare was done, kind of, maybe. I don't know.
That's cool.
But it was really affecting, and apparently Valley Luton he uses that same technique in a few other movies. But holy crap, that worked for me very well. I was like, that sound effect they put in, like, it was obviously a cat sound they put in, but then it just morphs into a bus. Yeah,
so good.
I loved it. Yeah, and then there's the stalking scene later. So yeah, there's this whole thing about, like, Oliver wants out of the relationship. It finally gets to this point, and the doctor's like, well, he said, like, the state law wouldn't let him divorce her if she's insane.
Oh my God, yeah.
Or something. And they were, like, talking about having her committed. He's like, oh, I'll draw up the committing papers or whatever they're called, so we can send her to the loony bin or whatever. Yeah, it was just like, and the three of them, like, it was really gross, and it really puts you on, like, Irina's side, because you're like, God, these people are just, like, you know, they want to, like, get on with their lives and just put this poor girl away. And
yeah, you're right. It was such a good establishing scene for, like, it's getting a little skeevy now, just that people want their better interests. Oliver's still kind of hanging in there, but the doctor's like, so the two options were, like, you can have her committed. Mm-hmm. Or you just leave her. Like, this doesn't help. This doesn't help the patient, but it's going to help you, Oliver, to get on with your life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, this is the 40s. Wives are chattel. This is, like, you know, it's what matters is what is the man's life. You know, that's.
Yeah.
That's what it was like. And that, you know, that's how they treated this.
It's like, just wash your hands clean of her and she will be a burden to the state or where, you know, whoever decides to deal with her when she's on the street kind of.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, they're like trying to get Irina to, like, I guess, drag her away. but she doesn't, like, show up where they think she's going to be. And then that leads Oliver and Alice. They're like, well, it's late. We're going to go do some work again. They really use this boat engineer's architecture set a lot. It was great, though. Like, it looked, I don't know if it was, like, a real place, because it looked like, I was convinced.
It,
I don't know what
real
boat architecture offices look like, but I was on board.
It certainly doesn't look out onto the water. That's for sure.
No.
I guess you don't need to when you're just at the architecting stage.
Nah, you're just designing them.
Yeah.
So they go there, but then we get another stalking scene. Irina follows them there. The light, I think the lights go out and the door gets locked as they're about to leave.
Oh, yeah.
And they get an inkling, like, oh, they also got a phone call where no one talked. And they're like, wait, I think Irina might be here. So they're locked in there. And then all of a sudden the shadows start dancing again. And they're being stalked around in the dark, around all these, like, light tables and stuff. And this is the first time we really see a cat. Like, there's a literal panther in there walking around.
They just, like, really, that's like the day on set where they release a panther on set. So everybody's got to, like, be, you know, like, away or, you know, cat wranglers there.
Totally.
Probably to just shock the panther into submission when it's, you know, it's 1942. So,
yeah.
They're just like revolvers. Everybody's got guns on their hips or something.
Yeah. I think I read that Val Luton's bosses made them use a cat in this scene, because I think they were still going to do the pants, just the shadow stuff. And they're like, no, you got to start showing cats. We got to start leading on that she really is a cat. But I wasn't mad. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
And they somehow get out of there. Yeah. And there's also this whole thing that we haven't really talked about. Irina, her favorite place to hang out is the zoo with the with the panthers locked in those small cages, which was driving me nuts just watching those big jungle cats pacing back and forth in their, like, 10 by 10 cell. I hated it.
I know. It was tough. I mean, that's just what they did, you know, and that's just what they did in zoo exhibits. They just shove them on this concrete cage with nothing. There's no ball. There's no hammock. Yeah, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, and she's like talking with like the janitor who's like sweeping up leaves and stuff, and he's always leaving his key in the cat cage.
Right? Oh my God.
This guy.
Jeez Louise, man.
So she, at some point she takes that key away, and she has this key to let the cats out.
Should she ever need it, you know, just in case. It's not used right away.
Yeah. And I totally thought she was going to like attack people and then like release the cat so that she could get away with it. Oh,
really?
Like I thought that was going to be like part of it, like part of the story where she was going to use the loose zoo cat as her alibi. Mm. But I just thought
she was going to climb in there and become what she...
Yeah. That was the other thing. I thought she was going to like let the cat go and then just take its place.
Yeah.
And live in the zoo, like as like self-punishment for, you know.
Right.
For having or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that would have been a cool ending too if she got locked up in there. Yeah, but she it seems like she's had it. Did she kill anybody before? Did she kill anyone in this?
No, she what's crazy is it's implied, well, it's not implied. She killed that sheep, remember?
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, crazy. Yeah, yeah. She does kill someone. I forgot, though. She kills the psychiatrist. Remember the psychiatrist goes back to the apartment because he still wants... He's frothing to get her committed.
Yeah, that's this guy. Like he's committed but quota.
But he also, I think... remember he goes in for a kiss? He also was like obsessed with proving to her that she wasn't a cat.
Right, yeah. He was going to be right no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. That's so right. he kind of got what he deserved. But yeah, mm-hmm. So Irina comes home and he's just there being a creep, but she goes into cat mode and fucks him up.
Hell yeah, man. Like he rues the day, you know, it's over for him.
That was pretty great. Cause then all the old ladies in the apartment building, like just fill into the apartment to stare at the dead body and Irina just sneaks away.
Yeah.
It's so good. Yeah, and she goes to the zoo, and it's a sad ending. She has that key to the cat's thing, and
yeah,
I wasn't sure what was going on, but she just opens up that cage, and they show this nervous panther, and he just jumps out, and on his way out, I guess he claws Irina. Knocks her to the ground.
I think it was the safest, most tactful way in those days with no CGI to like show that the panther was always intimidated by Irina. Like she liked to be there, but the panther was always agitated by her.
Oh, yeah.
And so when she opens the cage, he jumps out of the cage, but in the flight of the cage, he like claws her to death. He probably like pops an artery or something like that. And he runs out into the street, which is like 10 feet away from the panther cage.
Yeah.
Like it's right there.
Yeah.
The panther just cage is like on the street. Wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's protective wall. Zoo wall to keep the animals in. None of that in 1942.
Nah. Poor guy. He like immediately gets hit by like a taxi.
I know. Panther. He never stood a chance.
Come on.
Never stood a chance out there in the big world. I know.
Central Park, right? He could go fucking run around. I know. Stalk some pigeons. I don't know.
Have a little fun, but no.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Oliver and Alice, they were like, well, she loves that zoo. Maybe she's down there. Let's go down there after they find the dead doctor. And this was a cool shot because I didn't realize it until he kind of said it. Like, what did he say at the, like, they see this black mass laying on the ground outside the cage. And I thought it was just her coat or something.
Yeah.
But I guess it was supposed to be a dead panther. Like,
yeah. It was, and it was like wrapped, draped across the panther was the jacket.
Yeah.
She never lied to us.
Yeah, great, great line.
I know.
Well, that's it. She never lied to us. Let's go, honey.
Oh, let's go get married and experience real love.
Yeah, that's our problems are solved. But yeah, that's Cat People, Dale.
Yeah.
Woo.
Incredible movie. I really, really loved this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It was more than I bargained for.
Uh-huh.
I gotta say.
For sure. Yeah. There's a lot more of just the relationship part and the, the ins and outs of that and suffering with something and being there for your partner and also making the grown-up decision whether it's the right thing for you and also, you know, the tension and the lighting for the horror parts, the thrilling aspects of the movie, man, it was really, really good.
Yeah, and I think it, even RKO, like this was made by their B movie unit. They, you know, it was a pretty low budget, under $200,000, I think. They probably didn't expect much out of it, but it was like a pretty big hit. It made like $4 million domestically and $4 million in foreign markets the year it came out, which is huge for what they thought was just like a B movie.
It's so huge.
Word just fucking spread. Like, hey, there's this movie's, you know, more than its silly title.
Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah. And they even did a sequel, which I'm interested to check out.
Dude, I totally am too. I was, as soon as I found out about it, I couldn't believe that the three major players are back in the movie.
I know. I read the description. I was like, oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oliver, yeah. Irina, and Alice all come back.
Yeah.
And it's a direct sequel. Like,
yeah,
you know, I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah. Got to check that out. And of course, Paul Schrader remade this in, what, 82?
Right.
Yeah. Which I've seen. And that, it didn't, I'm a huge Paul Schrader fan, but it just didn't, I don't know. I wished I had seen this first because I bet it would make some of the stuff in that movie make a little more sense to me. But, I remember getting kind of bored with that new version of it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to watch that. I mean, I've seen, if I saw it, I was in the single, you know, I was like 9 or 10 maybe when I saw it.
Oh, wow,
I remember there was like naked women or naked woman in it at least. So, you know, I don't know if, I know it's probably a little more like out there. I remember it being a little more out there in terms of like not firmly within my grasp of understanding, but I kind of want to see it now.
Oh, sorry. Nastasia Kinski, not
Hensky. That's it. Sorry. Yeah, Kinski.
Klaus Kinski's daughter. Visually, that movie is amazing. I remember there's some shots in there that are nuts. But yeah, cat people, man. Cat people. Oh, and I also want to, I want to learn more about this Val Lewton character because he seems to be the one that was the magic here. And I saw that Martin Scorsese did a documentary about him.
Whoa.
Yeah. He died really young. He like died when he was like 46 of like a heart attack. So he didn't work too much longer, but he did a lot of stuff. Like he was involved with Gone with the Wind. Like that was like one of his first jobs. He was like,
wow,
Selznick's assistant director or something like that. But,
well,
but yeah, he did a lot of stuff. Not all horror movies, which is cool.
That's cool.
Val Lewton. Cool. Do we have any, listener feedback, Dale?
We do. And you can send your own to batandspiderpod@gmail.com or call the Bat and Spider hotline 315-544-0966. First email up is from Hobo Salary on the Instagram. Nice. Thanks, Hobo. With all the Beastmaster talk, I wanted to chime in with this quick story. When my wife and I started dating, we did a thing a lot of couples do, start showing each other the movies that defined our childhood. She showed me Neverending Story, and I was so critical she turned it off 30 minutes in. I was being an asshole.
Oh, man.
Jeez.
Hobo, you gotta chill out, man.
Later, I showed her Beastmaster. I'm sitting there loving every minute, not realizing she's totally silent. The movie ends, and I look over, and all she says is, "Don't ever make me watch that again."
Oh, man.
She probably ripped Torrance's hair in that movie. It was both the most crushing and hilarious thing that happened up to that point, and now supersedes all other prior Beastmaster memories.
Wow. Wow.
Hobo.
That's real, man.
Yeah.
I think we've all been there. showing the person we love the most the like an important movie that we think is just infallible because we saw it at 5 years old.
And then,
you know, you show it to a full grown person, they're seeing it for the first time and they're just like, "What?"
Especially when there's no mercy involved.
Oh,
They're just giving you the business, like the real how it should be told.
Yeah. You know? Turn this off. This is garbage.
No kid glove. Yeah, there's no kid glove handling of the situation.
Which is, it's almost better. It's better to not go through the whole process. Like, if it's like, if you got an out half hour in, t- take it.
Yes. Exactly.
It's not going to get better. Not going to get better.
And we have one voicemail. So we have one email, one voicemail in the span of 24 hours, Chuck. I don't know. It's great.
Crazy.
Thank you, folks.
Bat and Spider, this is Corey. Well, how great was it that Dirk finally watched Beastmaster? Man, there's, you don't run into too many people that haven't seen it within a certain age bracket, I guess. But, of course, Beastmaster was an amazing film growing up with that. I remember that it used to be, the joke was that HBO stood for, hey, Beastmaster's on in the 80s. So, and then, yeah, the Dad from Good Times is great, and I still quote him in, often from that movie because he says, life's a circle, when he was talking about how him and the Beastmaster would run into each other again. And I agree with that, and it predates Matthew McConaughey's Time is a Flat Circle from True Detective by decades.
Right.
So obviously the Dad from Good Times is way ahead of McConaughey. Or maybe they're happening at the same time. I don't know.
Oh, God.
Anyway, keep up the great work, guys. Looking forward to the next episode. And then, hey, let's start a Beastmaster thing on Discord. We can all talk about Beastmaster because, gosh, I could talk about that all day.
Thanks, Corey. I'm looking for, you know, all this Beastmaster talk, it's gotten me hyped for this Vinegar Syndrome 4K edition that's coming. Like, when do we have to wait, though? Is that going to be December when it comes?
I think it's
December.
I think Beastmaster shipping right after Black Friday, so early December.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what goodies are within.
Yeah. I've only seen parts of it, like just as a child on TV, so like my memory is super fuzzy.
Yeah.
But I really want to wait for that disc to come to experience it, you know. Ooh. But yeah, we should do some Beastmaster talk in December 2020, Dale.
Oh, man. Okay. I'll see you there.
Thanks for the voicemail, Corey. And yeah, he mentioned the Discord. If you're not in the Discord, jump in. We're having a fun time chatting about stuff, showing our collections of horror-related stuff. And
Yeah.
Good vibes.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's growing every day. People are joining. So come along.
People are talking about their favorite jazz musicians today.
I know. Things go heavy in there.
I almost banned everyone in that channel. Just kidding.
That's awesome. So now, Chuck, I have to pick a movie for
it's that time. My favorite part of the week.
When you don't have to do it, it's for your favorite part. So I've had it down to two, okay? So it's tough. I was confident I was gonna make a decision by this point. I kinda wanna go back. I know I just talked about Hammer Mummy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, 'tis the season.
Sure 'tis.
So I'm going to pick the Hammer production of Captain Kronos Vampire Hunter.
Whoa. Oh, 1974. So this is like a later Hammer.
This is intended to be the first of a new series of like a new IP. And I think Hammer kind of fell apart shortly after.
Wow. Cool. It's a great title. I mean, it's always caught my eye when I come across it.
When several young girls are found dead, left hideously aged and void of blood, Dr. Marcus suspects vampirism. He enlists the help of the vampire hunter. Mysterious and powerful, Kronos has dedicated his life to destroying the evil pestilence. Once a victim of its diabolical depravity, he knows the vampire's strengths and weaknesses, as well as the extreme dangers attached to confronting the potent forces of darkness. So this is a Hammer without Peter Cushing, without Christopher Lee, without Terrence Fisher. So we are getting something all new, and it seems like a swashbuckling adventure / horror story.
Yeah. I mean, the poster, it's who I guess is Captain Kronos. He's dressed up like, I don't know, what's he dressed up like? Kind of a pirate-ish guy with a
red musketeer.
Cape and kind of like that. A sword in one hand and a cross in the other. And he is confronting a hooded figure with a beautiful lady holding on to the hooded figure. Yeah, looks great. Horst Janssen. Is that who plays Kronos? It's a great name.
I hope so.
Horst. I know a Horst once.
You did?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he ran a print shop. Yeah.
That sounds like somebody who would run a print shop. Awesome.
Yeah. Wow. I'm excited for this, Dale. Good pick. Yeah. Where's it playing? It looks like you can get it anywhere. It's on Amazon Prime. Sweet. So, anything else you want to say before we depart?
No, I think that's it. I think we did a great episode, Chuck. I know that much.
Another 5-star episode.
Mm-hmm.
Cat People.
Good job.
Seriously, if you've ever seen Cat People, maybe check it out, you know?
Yeah.
It's an interesting one.
Really good.
All right. Peace out, y'all.
Peace, Chuck. I love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Our theme song was created by Toby Forsman of Whipsong Music. Find out more at whipsongmusic.com.
John drove out the Mamelukes and came to our village. He found dreadful things. People bowed down to Satan and said their masses to him. They had become witches and were evil.